Radio Influence. The future is now.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
Okay, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us, everybody. I am Jeff Crushell, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track, and we're your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're trying to get better or trying to be the best at whatever it is you do, you're in the right place. If you want to check us out online, it's crushperformance.com. Follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush, and on Facebook, we got a cool little group going on. It's called the Talent Grid. It's a private group or locked group or whatever they call it. And love to have you join. We got a great little community growing there. We got experts from virtually all aspects of sport and performance. We've got parents, coaches, athletes. It's just turning out to be a fun little project. It's called the Talent Grid. Go on there, sign up. We'll let you in, and you can comment, post, and get all the hookups to the world of performance. Today on the show, we got a really big one, a real important show. We're going to start talking about the intangibles of sport performance, evaluating players, predicting future performance, and also looking at how you can help athletes, students, employees really achieve their potential and do well at what they do, the intangibles. We'll talk about it today. We're going to look at identifying and evaluating talent and potential and what might be the most important part of the puzzle. Is it experience? If we look back at an athlete's body of work throughout their career or even in their development before they sign pro, what are the key factors you need to consider? We look at skill evaluation. I mean, a lot of sports have, you know, I guess events where they look at players and break them down and try to evaluate their current skill levels so they can project these athletes forward. NFL has the combine, NHL has a combine. A lot of the Major League Baseball teams are now having sort of combine type camps. We know the NBA tries guys out. And so every single sport has their version of sort of that skill evaluation. And then, of course, you just have talent and skill, that in-game evaluation, the scouting reports, or, you know, in the business industry, it would be work evaluations, work reviews. But in sport, it's really interesting because you can see what an athlete's capable of while playing in the present or via player evaluations that look at the body of work like a combine. In work or school, for example, you can get references, interviews, you can interview peers and bosses, you can go to the teachers and find out what the person's like. But in sport, you are out there, and it's really interesting to see that sometimes that's not quite enough. The issue I have with scouting reports or job interviews is that you get this little Polaroid of what a person's like right now, and it doesn't project well into the future. As a matter of fact, the percentages and the accuracy of predicting future performance in young athletes is horrendous. And the younger the athletes get, the worse the percentages are. I mean, if you look at the drafts over the last couple of years for every single major sport, and you look at the top draft picks and how many actually proceed on to playing successful professional careers, it's an abysmal rate. So we're really missing something in the talent identification, or at least in the review of predicting where an athlete's at and where they could potentially go in the future. And there's these things called the intangibles, those things that exist behind the curtain, like the traits who make us are what we are. Some call it character, but I think it's more than that. We have words like aggressiveness, patience, compete levels, intelligence, coachability, perseverance, and something called grit. And today on the show, we're going to talk with Angela Duckworth. She's a 2013 MacArthur Genius Fellow. She's advised the White House, the World Bank. She's worked with NFL teams, NBA teams, Fortune 500 CEOs. She's an associate professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Pennsylvania. She's a scientific director of the Character Lab and author of the bestseller Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. And so the question of the day is this. What do you think is the most valuable tool or most valuable, I guess, characteristic in predicting future performance in athletes, in students, or in employees? And Connor, this is not an exact science by any means. I mean, we watch the NFL Combine or we look at the NHL draft and we see players come and go And there's no real rhyme or reason sometimes. Yes, there's those locks. There's no question about it. Those talented athletes that we just absolutely know are going to go on to greatness. But in the majority, I think we see a real inaccuracy in trying to predict future performance.
Yeah, you really need a combination of both, because we've seen world-class athletes that just can't figure it out. And maybe it's mental, or maybe they do have something, you know, that takes them away from that disease, an addiction of some sort. There's guys that are out of every sports league that probably shouldn't be because something happened. They didn't just get it right. I think you need the perfect combination, because you can have all the talents in the world, but mentally, if you're not committed to working harder than anyone else, you might not get there. Look at Ryan Leaf in the NFL.
Right, for sure. Or how about the Browns parting ways with Josh Gordon here? I know Josh Gordon, he's had substance abuse issues, but that's a real distraction in the clubhouse. We've heard the organization talk about it. They just said, hey, look, it's time for us to part ways, and it's time for the team to move on. We wish him all the best, but the team has got to move on in the direction we need to go. It just wasn't a fit, and we've seen this before. We've seen some pretty high-priced players passed on or traded or moved away because it wasn't a good fit inside of that team atmosphere, and that's an important concept.
Yeah, exactly. Johnny Manziel with the Cleveland Browns, right. If you want to have another one, a guy who won a Heisman in college, was a great player. Some think he could still be a good player, but off the field, he's just too much of a distraction, so he doesn't fit in. But, I mean, for me, I think the biggest attribute that I like to see would be heart. I want a guy who loves to do what they're doing, and that's what you see, you know, just the name of the day, Connor McDavid being named a captain at such a young age. There's a guy who just loves the game of hockey, and you can tell that's his first priority. Luckily, he was blessed with an insane set of skills to go along with it, but man, I mean, that's the kind of guy, that's the can't miss.
Well, and that's a great example, because teams are now looking for those full package type players and athletes to contribute to their teams and their future, you know, because you look at Connor McDavid, they're building this entire team around him, the youngest captain in the history of the NHL. He's obviously, we know this for a fact, been surrounded by great people through his developmental years. The Oilers are surrounding him with great people, and they're also putting a great responsibility on him. But listening to his interview, when he talks about getting the C and what it means, what a grounded young professional Connor McDavid is.
Yeah, 19 years, 266 days, technically. I mean, I think he's got the brain of like a 35-year-old. He's been groomed so well from a young age. He can handle the media. He handles the pressure, the criticisms, which there aren't that many of. He's just able to take that and not really respond in a negative manner. Everything he does is just so calm, cool, and collected.
So why Connor McDavid? I guess it raises the question, are these intangibles trainable? And that's a big question. If we can harness this, if we can understand them maybe a little bit better, and maybe even learn to evaluate them, how powerful would that be? You said heart is one of your primary, I guess, keys when you look at the potential of a player. Could you compare heart to grit? Well, coming up after the break, we're going to talk with Angela Duckworth about her research and her best-selling book. It's called Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. Stick around. A great conversation coming up right after this on Crush Performance. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Each week, we look at the latest trends and research coming out of the performance world to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it takes to achieve human maximum performance. And athletes, now you can do just that as Crush Performance presents the Sport Matrix, the program for top performance in sport. For more information, go to crushperformance.com. We're here to help you think like an athlete.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to the show. Jeff Crushell here, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track. And thanks for sticking around today. A real important conversation. Today, we're talking about the intangibles, those things that exist that make us who we are, the things behind the scenes that make us tick. Some call it character, but I think it's much more than that. I think there's words like aggressiveness, patience, self-control. Some say compete levels and intelligence, coachability. Some call it perseverance. There's words like mindset. Connor throws out the word heart. I like the word grit. The text question of the day is this. You can get to us at 101260. Standard text rates do apply. Or answer us on Twitter at Jeff Crush. What do you think is more important in talent ID and recruitment? Skills and performance, or the intangibles like talent, character, and grit? So what do you think is more important in terms of evaluating future success and the potential of an athlete? Is it those skills and talent that they're expressing right now, or is it those intangibles, and how do you measure those? Well, we're joined right now by Angela Duckworth. She's associate professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Pennsylvania, the scientific director of the Character Lab, and author of the bestseller Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. Angela, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Angela, in the world of sport and even high performance, the concept of character and the intangibles like aggressiveness, compete levels, patience, intelligence, coachability are all becoming more recognized as important factors in the recruitment process, even to the point where these intangibles are preceding skill and talent at times when it comes to evaluating whether a player has the characteristics to fit into a team setting or has the projection or the ability to develop moving forward. And grit has now become a very big part of the talent ID landscape. And is it fair to say that it has implications, not just in sport, but in virtually every aspect of life?
Yeah, I mean, it's not that I think that grit is the only thing that matters in life, but I think when you look at high achievers in every field you can imagine, you do find that it is a common denominator among those who really excel.
When we talk about the psychology of achievement, you mentioned in one of your presentations that self-control and grit are really strong predictors of success. And it has a lot to do with how much effort people put in and towards their pursuits. And I think that's a pretty interesting concept because typically we look at somebody's ability to do something at this point in time. But to get to this point in time, there's probably a lot of work that's been put in.
Yeah, I mean, when people watch excellent performance on, you know, YouTube videos or, you know, the highlights after a game, you know, I think what you see is in some ways it looks effortless. It certainly looks fluent. And I'll tell you that as someone just from personal experience, for example, writing this book, I hope that the words are eventually fluent. And when you get them, you just go through. But before fluency comes hours and hours of disfluency. And at least that's how it was during, you know, many drafts of, imperfection and clumsiness. So what I'd like to do as a psychologist is to make sure people understand the reality of excellence is a whole lot of inexcellence in the months and years before.
So Angela, when we talk about grit, okay, and it's a word that's it's out there now, and your book, of course, has spurred that on. How would you define grit for the athletes, parents, coaches, and even business people who are listening today?
I define grit really, if you want a one-word definition, as stamina. But to unpack that, I think stamina in two dimensions. One is stamina of effort, and that means you're working daily on things that you can't yet do with the kind of disciplined, deliberate practice that has been shown to characterize experts continuing to learn every day as opposed to stagnating. It also means, you know, stamina of effort in that you're resilient, and then you have a bad game, a bad season, you know, an injury, that you don't let that hold you back. But then there's this other aspect of stamina, which is really about your sustained passion. I mean, if you work really hard, but you change what you're working on wholly, like, you know, you completely change sports, you completely change professions, it's not necessarily that it's always the wrong thing to do, but you really don't have traction then. And, there's a difference, I think, between being an expert in what you do and being a promising beginner. So I mean grit to be the combination of perseverance and passion for long-term goals.
Angela, is grit something that's trainable, do you think, or is it one of those innate sort of inborn genetic traits that people have? Or could it be something we gain from the people around us or the environment we're in?
I think grit is absolutely trainable, and that doesn't mean I don't think there's anything to do with your DNA that has to do with your grit. Obviously, your genes do matter for everything about you, not just, you know, your height or your eye color. Absolutely, psychology is in part a function of these genes that we had no hand in picking from our mom and our dad. But the important thing is that no matter what your genetic endowment, there's a lot of, there's a lot of influence of the experiences in our lives after we're born, while we're growing up, the coaches we have, you know, the schools we go to. And so I'm interested in this other piece, which is the nature versus nurture piece, not the not the nature part, but the extent to which, you know, you can nurture your nature, if you will.
I like it. We're talking with Angela Duckworth, associate professor at the Department of Psychology at the University of Pennsylvania and author of the bestseller Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. Well, I wanted to find out how gritty I was in the bigger scheme of things. So I went online and I did the questionnaire and I scored a 4.09. How do you think I did?
Well, let me ask you, what do you feel like you scored higher on some items than others, and you know, maybe you were 5 on some items, but not so, like, can you remember what made your grit score?
Yeah, I think so. I think one of the things that sort of maybe brought my score down was the idea of new tasks coming on and me maybe jumping to a new task and leaving something behind, or maybe still continuing with something, but it's not my main focus. On the other side, I think one of my great scores was that I will see anything that I start through to its finish. So there's kind of a fine balance there.
Yeah, there is. And I'll tell you, the scale is not a perfect instrument by any means. And one of the problems of the scale is when I wrote these items about having a consistent passion over years, at least when you're an adult, what I meant was, you know, do you have a top level goal? Do you have some project where you say, you know, I'm not going to get bored of this. My life is about fill in the blank. And people fill in the blank differently. But when they're able to fill in that blank, it's often a very abstract goal. For me, it's helping children through psychological science. You know, when you come back in 10 years, 20 years, God help me, 30 years, 40, like however long I get on the planet, I'm going to be working on that. I think you should be tenacious about this abstract, life-giving, meaningful goal. But say there are little to-do lists that, you know, you couldn't get this guest to be on your podcast, you know, that particular project didn't work out. You really want almost infinite flexibility about the near-term milestones that will get you to this long off goal, but you want flexibility at the bottom of your goal hierarchy and inflexibility at the top.
I agree. You know, when we look at the research and reading through the book, it's a fantastic read. It's called Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. You know, trying to get an understanding of how grit plays a role, you know, especially when it comes to top performers, because we always try to look at the best and the experts and see how they got there and, you know, what traits they have and how we can maybe adapt and utilize those to help ourselves and the people around us. But it was really interesting to hear you say that you discovered or felt that you found an inverse relationship between grit and, say, something like talent. I thought that was a pretty fascinating perspective.
Well, I'll say this more strongly, which is that sometimes we find no relationship at all, meaning that if I know how talented you are, I can say nothing about your grit. You could be high, you could be lower. And it's also, you know, obviously the opposite is true. If you're really high in grit, you know, you might be talented, you might be less talented. That's what we often find. I have in some data sets found a negative relationship, meaning the more talented the player or the person, the less gritty they are. Regardless, I think what you can say, and I do think it's somewhat surprising, at least to me, is that being very able at something doesn't guarantee that you'll put in that effort. We sort of wish those people would, right? Because when they try, there's a huge payoff. But it turns out that the hardest workers and those with the most stamina are not always the most gifted.
I wonder, it's interesting if it has something to do with the concept of just being engaged and getting that, you know, that sort of deepening interest over time of the task you're involved in. You know, we look at professional athletes, for example. These guys are special and women are special simply because they were able to, you know, go through the tedium and boredom and the repetitive nature of a professional sport to get to the level they're at, where a lot of people would find it boring and give up early.
You know, there's speculation. I have my own ideas. I think that's very interesting. I mean, you might have better ideas than I do about why talent and grit don't go hand in hand as I might have expected. It's you know, you mentioned one possibility. Here's a slightly different alternative. You know, who learns how to get up again? Well, the person who has done a lot of falling, right? So maybe if things do come easily to you, you know, that becomes your strategy. You know, you put in less time, less effort, and you kind of move on to the next thing. But for sure, some of the people that I've interviewed who really are especially gritty and for whom, you know, things didn't come as easily, they will say that, you know, they had to learn how to do this.
We're talking with Angela Duckworth, Associate Professor of the Department of Psychology at the University of Pennsylvania and author of the great book. It's called Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. The conversation today, of course, focusing on the idea of grit. Angela, you know, I did the questionnaire and I think it was pretty valuable. I look at teams and scouts, and I get a chance to work with some GMs and, you know, scouting directors in virtually every single sport, and they're always looking for ways to evaluate and identify talent. It's one of the greatest, I guess, mysteries that we have right now, I think, in terms of sport development. But it's interesting to see that the idea of character is sometimes now, you know, preceding the conversation about skill and talent overall. And I think grit has a lot to do with it. If you were, say, sitting with me in the stands watching a ball game, what kind of things would you look for to determine whether an athlete or a person has grit? Or say in the classroom when you're evaluating your students, what do you look for that might give us an idea of grittiness?
I have a couple of clues that come to me from coaches. You know, I was talking recently to coaches and of course chefs and others, and I've asked them a very similar question. When you have a young person, an apprentice, a newcomer, you know, how do you know that this person's going to actually be the person who perseveres and works really hard every day with focus, with passion? And the characteristics seem to be common, whether it's in sports or not. You know, first to come, last to leave, whether that's practice or work. This isn't necessarily meaning that, you know, staying up all night and being stupid about your effort is what's desired. But I do think there's a kind of enthusiasm where, like, you know, the meeting's supposed to start at 3. That person shows up at 2:57. Everybody goes home, but that person's, like, still doing push-ups. Like, you know, I think that's an indicator. One of the coaches I recently talked to said, eyes like saucers. You know, there's, like, eyes wide open. They're just, you know, trying to soak up every little bit of information they can. One of the most important hallmarks is very hard to observe, but when, and almost by definition, when nobody is looking, who's practicing? So if you ask Anson Dorrance about the soccer players who were truly great, you know, the Mia Hamm players, including Mia Hamm herself, you know, he will say it is when I'm not looking and when nobody's looking that a champion is really distinguished because they're trying. Great chefs who early in their careers would work 80-hour shifts and come home and instead of going to bed or, you know, watching television, are trying to make a better omelet. I mean, these are the things that you, if you could count them, you know, I think it would bring you that gritty person. It's not always easy to count these things or to measure them.
Oh, great stuff. We're talking with Angela Duckworth, the author of the bestseller Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. Angela, you are also the scientific director for the Character Lab. Now, this is a fantastic initiative for anybody who's involved in talent development, and some of the resources there are great. One of the things I picked up out of the Character Lab is the fact that you guys have identified sort of three clusters of character strengths: the strengths of heart, strengths of mind, and strengths of will. Maybe tell us a bit about the Character Lab and these clusters of strengths. I really like this.
Well, we find when we ask teachers, for example, to rate students or even ask students to rate themselves on a whole variety of characteristics that are all positive, you know, we call them character strengths. People sometimes prefer other terminology, but anyway, we find that they cluster in these three groups, and you can understand these groups by what they do for you. So the cluster that I study most is the achievement cluster. You know, these are the strengths of doing. These are like, you know, self-control, grit, optimism, growth mindset. These are the things that no matter what your goal is, they help you. But the second strength cluster is, I think, very important as a complement to the first one, which is to be a good person to other people, to really be able to relate. So, you know, you can call them the strengths of heart. You can call them the strengths of relating. This is about generosity, about gratitude, empathy, compassion, and so forth. And then the third cluster are, you can call them strengths of mind, if, you know, strengths of thinking. And these are creativity, curiosity, zest, particularly for learning. And I think that if you want to ask the question, well, what would be a complete life? It would be hard to imagine one where you didn't at least have something in each of these three categories.
I think that's really important for parents, for coaches, for GMs and organizations to really pay attention to, because I think if we're trying to look at developing environments where people can be successful. We talk about the nature versus nurture and nurturing development and performance. Those three things can be worked into basically every environment I can imagine people are involved in.
Yeah, I think they're sort of, you know, we talk about like, why do people like sports so much, which I didn't really understand until pretty recently. I think it's because in sports, there's an opportunity to demonstrate, to view and to develop the strengths in all the categories I just mentioned. And yeah, the parallels between, you know, sports and life, or really between business and sports and what a kid needs to do in school, they're striking. And I would say that, you know, as a mom, I kind of want these things to happen in my own kids. As a human being myself, I want to develop them. So I think there is something universal about it.
We're talking with Angela Duckworth, the author of the bestseller Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. Angela, if I were to ask you, you know, when we look at the top performers, and you mentioned this in a lot of your data, and it's mentioned as well in the book, the concept of practice and people really understanding what it takes to practice properly, a lot of people don't quite understand that. And I think that's a big barrier.
I think that's right. You know, when I asked of the Juilliard, the music school has a performance psychologist, and he has a PhD in psychology. He only discovered deliberate practice himself in his 20s, and he had been practicing violin with tremendous discipline, at least tremendous effort, since he was 2, literally. And I asked him, you know, wow, how can you come so late to this realization about the best way to practice? And also, you know, how is it at Juilliard? I mean, I assume these kids all know how to do it. And he said, I literally didn't know how to practice. It was an ignorance gap. And that explained why I spent 20 years practicing inefficiently. And then at Juilliard, even if you walk down the hallways today and you listen to people practice, you know, a lot of it is not deliberate practice. And by that, of course, we mean practice where you're intentionally solving a very specific problem, like one aspect of your overall performance. You're not working on everything. You're working on one thing that you need to do better. So it's a relative weakness. You're working with complete concentration. You're getting immediate feedback, and you're analyzing that feedback to make an adjustment to do the whole thing again. And what happens with music and sports is a lot of times people are just like, oh, I'm just going to play this piece for an hour. I'm just going to throw this ball, you know, try to hit it in the net, like, for an hour. But is it intentional? Is it really experimental problem solving? Like, okay, I'm going to try it with my left elbow a little higher. How'd that go? Didn't work. Let me put it a little lower. I mean, that's the crucial difference.
Oh, learning how to practice. And I guess that comes from tutoring, coaching, teaching, mentors. We need some direction, and I think that's where leadership really comes into play.
I think that's true. I think that really there's a huge responsibility here for coaches. And I actually, when you say coaches, leaders, teachers, I think they're all the same thing, really,
yep.
Right? You know, that's a person whose job it is to bring out your best. And, you know, it's the same thing as if you're a seventh grade math teacher, as if you're a coach for the NBA. And in all those cases, I think you have to remember that the player or the student really, in most cases, relies on you to help them figure out what is that next thing I should be working on. They're relying on you for that feedback, and they're also relying on you for the motivation to really appreciate the feedback. I myself find it hard to hear when someone says, oh, you know, your talk was great, but you could have done this differently. And I'm immediately defensive, of course, because I'm human. What great coaches do is they create a culture of trust and growth and psychological safety, and it makes people a little less afraid to confront their failures.
Isn't it interesting? We're talking with Angela Duckworth, associate professor at the Department of Psychology at the University of Pennsylvania. When we look at the dropout rates in sport right now, just as an example, there's about a 70% dropout rate at the age of 13. And through the surveys that they've done with kids, as sporting organizations try to understand why these young athletes and participants are dropping out of sport, the number one reason was being yelled at by the coach. And right up there in the top 3 or 4 was the ride home with the parents. So that feedback, I guess that goes back to the idea of that feedback, and that planting of ideas and thoughts is just so critically important. It has to be done properly.
I absolutely agree. And it's not easy, right? I mean, as any coach or parent will tell you, that sometimes you even know what you should do and it's just hard to do. And sometimes you don't even know what you should do. So it's not easy. But, you know, if you hang around great coaches, and I, you know, some of us have had the pleasure of witnessing like a great coach, or maybe we can ourselves remember having one, or a great teacher. When I was with Larry King, I said, you know, who's your greatest teacher? And he remembers a teacher where, you know, it wasn't even a subject, math actually turns out. It wasn't even something that he liked, but this teacher was so great, so passionate, so good at motivating. And I think if you can use that at least as a role model for yourself, it's like, you know, what are they doing? Like, how are they so positive and encouraging? I think that if you mishandle a kid's mistakes and their shortcomings, I mean, you can really sort of screw up, actually. And so I want to be forgiving for all of us, because it's not easy to do. But I also think it's important to recognize, I mean, it is a huge responsibility to, you know, you kind of hold the motivation of the player or the learner in your hand.
Yeah, Angela, last point here. You talk about the growth mindset and really challenging students to make sure that they're always growing and being challenged and never sort of happy with the status quo. That has a lot to do with that leadership. But that development of that growth mindset is so critical. And I guess in response to the way we present information to young people, it's a real critical time in development.
I absolutely, that's very much why I decided to, you know, focus my work on what I have. But I think the lesson for me is that, you know, we don't have to just rely on wisdom of kind of grandmother's wisdom or, you know, the way we always do things. I think there are meaningful advances, some of it based on science about, you know, how motivation works, you know, what goes on in somebody's head when they drop out of something. Carol Dweck's work on growth mindset is a sterling example. It's not a mystery entirely when someone gives up. What she's found is that if they believe that things like talent and intelligence are completely fixed, well, then when they confront a real failure, when they basically interpret that as evidence that, you know, there's some lower ceiling on their ability, and since that ceiling will never be broken, you know, they should give up. And so that's, I think, a huge step forward, because it says, oh, okay, now we can actually work on this person's beliefs, because if we can change those, then we can change this behavior that's downstream.
Ah, it's powerful stuff, Angela. Well, listen, thank you so much for your time today. Congratulations on the book. Again, it's called Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. One of the great websites you can go to is characterlab.org to get some more great information, and you can check out Angela's TED Talk. As you close your TED Talk, Angela, the statement is, we need to be gritty about getting our kids grittier. And I think that's sage advice.
Thank you. I try to remember it. You know, studying grit isn't a guarantee that you'll remember how important it is, but I'm trying.
Angela, thanks so much for your time today. Much appreciated.
Me as well. Thank you.
Okay, listen, we are way overdue here. Great conversation with Angela Duckworth. When we come back, we're going to sum up that conversation. I want to spend a little more time talking about practice and proper practice. So stick around. More performance talk on Crush Performance right after this.
Radio Influence brings you the best in digital media broadcasting. When it comes to sports, we've got experts like national sports radio host Rich Herrera, the fabulous sports babe, former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy, and former Bellator matchmaker Sam Kaplan. Want a good laugh? Then go on the beach with Pants and Roller Girl, or just LOL with Nancy Alexander. And when it comes to real life, Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger and Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill will make you think. When it comes to what you want, Radio Influence has you covered. Find our programming on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at CrushPerformance.com.
Okay, welcome back to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Grishel. The con man is here behind the glass, keeping us on track. We're your weekly source for performance information, coming off a fantastic conversation with Angela Duckworth, talking about her new book called Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. And that's what it comes down to. A lot of great things coming out of that conversation that I think we need to talk about. But if you're a parent, coach or even an employer, there's so many things that you can apply here. And understanding those intangibles, those things like grit. And what exactly is grit? Well, it's sort of that stick-to-itness, that ability to get up after you've fallen down, the ability to deal with hardships and challenges in a positive light. When so many people give up, when the going gets tough, gritty people find a way to break through. I think it was Thomas Edison that said, you know, something to the effect that, you know, when he was looking at how many times he failed to figure out the light bulb, you know, people would go and say, man, you screwed up so many times. It's ridiculous. He says, no. I didn't fail 10,000 times. He says, I found 10,000 ways not to do it. And that's an interesting perspective because every time he did it wrong, he knew that was a path that he could put aside and not go down again. And that's an interesting perspective when you think about skill development or talent development, and it can be applied to anything that we do. When we look at proper practice, for example, and the type of practice that we really need to apply in order to get better, I don't think a lot of people truly understand what it takes. This thing called deliberate practice. When we look at top performers, here's one thing that we know. Well, there's a couple of things we know, but one of the big things that we know about top performers and high performance people is they practice differently. We know that they set goals differently. They're way more accurate. They evaluate themselves differently during and after a performance or competition or presentation or whatever it might be. And they also set their next goal much more aggressively than the average person would. This idea of deliberate practice, though, can be put into any level of development. And it goes kind of like this. When we take our elite golfers, for example, let's say it's driving range day and we're working on the 7-iron. Well, we don't just go out and hit a bunch of balls with a 7-iron hoping to get better. No, we go into that training session with a very specific mindset, a very specific goal and objective. The only way you can hold a person or people accountable is to lay down very specific expectations. So our golfers, for example, it's 7-iron day. We're going to hit 300 balls, say 170 yards, with the goal of hitting 80% of those balls within 3 feet of the hole. Now we've set our goals and objectives. Now we get to work. Ball by ball, we strike it, we evaluate it, and then we get to the next repetition, constantly making adjustments. And you can apply that to almost anything you do. Here's what we don't typically do. We don't go into a task, a practice session, or even a game with deliberate intentions. This is this idea of deliberate practice, practicing with purpose. And that's where it all happens. When we look at top performers and we've done it, we've asked, you know, our professional athletes, and there's been great research on grandmaster chess players, on top musicians, and even as Angela mentioned, some of the great chefs. When they go into a practice session or when they go into experimenting or looking at a new food or a new item for the menu, they go in with very, very specific goals and objectives. And then there's a foundation that you can adapt from, something that you can read and react from for your next attempt. Three very important words that we'll talk about in the upcoming weeks: approach, result, response. Whenever you go into something, you have to have an approach and then you let it go. The result is entirely and for the most part out of your control. But when you do finally get that result, you can look at it and adapt and set your response for your next approach. It's a magic formula. We'll talk about it more next week. Have to thank Angela Duckworth for joining us today. A great conversation about her book, Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. Next week, we're looking at the mental game. So we'll talk to you then on Crush Performance.